Jerry Bader Show, 946, the Dow up 174 following the big day yesterday. All those stories written by Politico and others. Oh, that Donald Trump marrying himself to the markets, you know, they tank, and now he owns it because he said it was all on him. It's just everybody take a breath. And you are seeing a rebound here. We'll see how sustained it is. So here's an out of the blue. I want to get touch on this quickly. A lot of what we believe and feel is developed in our formative years. And we hang on to it forever. Sometimes in our adult years, for example, in the 1970s and 80s, when the traditional American car industry was making really bad cars, and they were. I mean, I'm telling you, in the 70s and 80s, Detroit made really bad cars. That allowed the Japanese market to grow. There are people back then in this country who were in the 20s and 30s, who are now 60s, even pushing 70, will not buy a Ford, a GM, Chrysler, won't do it, because back in the day, they decided that's it. Japanese companies make good cars, American company make bad cars. That was actually true back then. The gap largely has been closed. Largely. That just doesn't matter. Here's a more personal one. Earl, do you like liver? No. It took him no time. All right. Neither did I. Really didn't like the way my mom made liver. My mom was a great baker. If you could, the rest of her food, you really needed to hide the lard from her. She cooked everything in lard, including liver. It was even fresh liver from our own butchered cows. I love my mom, but bleh, hated liver. My wife's like, wow, how'd you ever have, what do you mean you hate liver? My wife makes liver with bacon and onions. It's awesome. In fact, she was making it the other night, and the neighbor came over with the kids selling Girl Scout cookies. And you know what she said? Boy, something smells good. And Ramona goes, a lot of people wouldn't feel that way. Now, admittedly, it's probably the bacon that she was smelling. But no, it doesn't hide it. It enhances. The bacon enhances the taste. It was really good. It was really, really good. I hated, I'm telling you, Earl, I hated liver. But people just can't be torn from what they believe. I'll bet you if you tried, I'm not saying you would love it. I'll bet you would enjoy it. You've come to love asparagus. I have always loved asparagus. My mom grew asparagus. Oh, you cut it fresh? There are three things fresh in this order, in my opinion. Corn on the cob. I mean, nothing. You break the cob off and you throw it in the pot. Oh, my goodness. Second, in my opinion, asparagus. Third would be green beans. Fresh. I mean, it is just amazing. Some people, anyway, now we digressed, although that, you know, now I'm hungry for all three of those vegetables, by the way. Thanks, Earl. And so is probably the average listener. Should I start talking about the melted butter dripping off the corn on the cob? And that's exactly. What's for dessert? Come up with something that'll make people stomach growl in the office. Or if they work in an assembly line, it'll be louder than the machine that they're on. Here's something else where people cannot be shaken from an idea. That high-speed rail's time has come. There's a joke about if there were ever be a third party, a third political party in America. You know how the joke goes? Yep, third party's the future and always will be. Meaning it's just never going to happen. What has happened is those on the political left who believe high-speed rail is the future want the future to be now, even though the technology for the dream they have in their mind's eye for high-speed rail, and I understand there are bullet trains in other parts of the world, but we haven't built that infrastructure. We haven't done that. And they're trying to retrofit it almost onto old infrastructure. Couple of things. Amtrak train breaks apart as it was traveling 125 miles an hour on its way to New York from D.C. as National Railway reels from three serious accidents in the last 2 months. Holman Jenkins has a piece on this in the Wall Street Journal today. The only good news for Amtrak is that none of its passengers died in the latest two crashes. He didn't even have this one. Last Wednesday's, with a train full of GOP congressmen, killed a passenger in a garbage truck, you know, again, with which the train collided. Sunday's, in which an Amtrak train collided with a CSX freight, killed two Amtrak employees. At least these weren't inexplicable cases of an Amtrak engineer driving off a curve at three times the posted speed limit, the type of accident that killed eight in Philadelphia in 2015 and three in Seattle in December. Amtrak has problems to work through, but rail collisions are actually pretty routine and thus a complication for our federal government's strange obsession with making passenger trains go faster. Of the 719 people killed in U.S. rail accidents in 2016, two were paying customers, 581 were trespassers. What does that mean? Individuals killed by a train while violating some barrier or warning sign. Another 117 were non-trespassers, or people on foot or in cars who were killed while not in violation of any barrier or warning signal. If 719 people were killed by airliners every year, Americans would go ape. And then he talks about how in the 70s he knew kids that were injured or killed by quote-unquote trespassing onto the track area. When fans fantasize about high-speed rail, they fantasize about trains so fast that a person could live in, say, Portland and commute to a job in Seattle. These visions, as appealing as they are, run into insurmountable costs because of the need to create new dedicated routes that are aggressively sealed against what the industry calls trespass. That, in a nutshell, is why federal policy has largely, if confusedly, devolved into trying to make trains go faster on existing mixed-use rail networks. There's the problem. You can create a network. It has happened in other countries. What they're trying to do, oh, what's an analogy? Land a 747 in a hayfield where you could land a Cessna. Now, is that an overstatement? Yes. That's an exaggeration. But it is the same principle. Well, we'll just take the existing track we have and send trains down them on what unfortunately turns out to be literally a breakneck speed. That's the problem. We don't have the infrastructure. The cost for the infrastructure is literally stifling. Holman Jenkins goes on. Liberals like the idea of high-speed rail, so a political solution has been to throw money at projects that can be labeled high or high-ish speed, like the Seattle project, which costs $180 million. Where it exists, commuter rail can certainly be a wise place for investing public money to increase capacity, but not for gratuitous pursuit of increased speed. Even less so now that modern electronics mean we don't have to interrupt our work or social life or Netflix consumption to ride the train. It's a great point. You can work on the commute. That's a great point. California's bullet train project is the tutty case in point. Hundreds of millions have been spent to rearrange places like Fresno in anticipation of a sealed corridor, which is what you need, for 220-mile-an-hour trains. The relentless Ralph Vartabedian of the Los Angeles Times last Sunday described how up and down the planned route, properties seized by the state have become an arson and crime-prone linear ghetto. California's bullet train controversy is turning into a culture war between Sacramento's liberal dreamers and people in its path who increasingly know in their hearts they are being pushed around and inconvenienced for a train that will never run. This is, you know what this is to me? This is the same mindset. This is the same philosophy of fossil fuels are bad, so we're going to replace them even though we don't have a viable replacement. I believe one day there will be a viable replacement. I believe one day we are going to discover or innovate fuel or fuels that are very, very clean and very, very efficient. It will happen. But you can't reverse engineer the process. You have to find something as cost-effective, as efficient, and as energy-generating as fossil fuels without propping it up. That's the key. Ethanol, wind, solar, they can all be contributing factors. I mean, that's fine. But the real answer is to find a fuel that will, or fuels, that will pack the punch and that will truly replace fossil fuels. If you can't afford the infrastructure for trains that go 220 miles an hour, for it's just not practical at this point, don't pretend that you can. They're the same thing. Gasoline existed. What can we do with it? How about the internal combustion engine? The fuel has to drive, historically, the fuel has driven the innovation, not the other way around. And that's what I think you're just going to have to see. Bunch of other stuff to get to after the news. 9:59.
For all things Jerry Bader, jerrybadershow.com.